Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Laurinelle of the High Desert here. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's currently Sunday, January 3rd, 2016, 8 p.m. I'm really looking forward to the upcoming year, 2016. 2015 is a great year for Laurinelle of the High Desert, so I know 2016 is going to be better and there's going to be more support, and I'm looking forward to it. LaurinelleTheHighDesert.com is brought to you by GrowWithLaurinelle.com. GrowWithLaurinelle is my own personal online marketing services. I work virtually with small businesses, individuals from all over California, all over the United States, and helping them develop their business, promote their products, reach their market. And I also offer virtual assistant tasks, such as helping to manage email, general website development, and related tasks. If you'd like to know more about that, please contact me at growwithlaurinelle@gmail.com. I really appreciate it. It's what helps keep this broadcast going. Laurinelle of the High Desert.com also has an online shop that I'm in. I'm currently developing, and I am looking to showcase authors, desert artists, and similar people. If you have a product that you would like to sell online, then please contact me, and I'm happy to list it on my store. And finally, LaurinelleTheHighDesert.com is always open to desert stewards, helping with the helping to put content up on the website and on Facebook. I am currently planning to relocate overseas, approximately in March. And so I am reaching out to residents in the area. If you would like to contribute content to LaurinelleTheHighDesert.com, then you're welcome to contact me. I'm happy to share more with you about information. And it's a great way to be involved with the community. It's a great way to meet people. And it's a lot of fun. I am kicking off the show with a piece of history coming from a booklet called The Morongo Basin, 100-Year Project, 1910 to 2010. This booklet was published by the Morongo Basin Historical Society, as well as the 29 Palms Historical Society. And the article that I'm reading is from the year 1948. The title is Inks Memorial Hospital, and here's what the article reads. 29 Palms is a paradox attracting sick lungers with the promise of clean desert air, yet lacking a modern hospital to meet the community's needs. This would change forever with the arrival of Dr. William Eames. In 1947, he moved his family out of the smog of Los Angeles and into the desert in an attempt to relieve his children's chronic respiratory complaints. Eames immediately began working on plans for a hospital to be named in honor of his late father, calling on the talents of architects Wallace Neff and Philip Zimmers and local contractor Walter Berg. The doctor soon broke ground on the $100,000 facility. The day before the grand opening, the staff realized that they had all of the equipment needed to run a state-of-the-art hospital, save one item. Someone had forgotten to order bedpans. After a frantic scramble, bedpans were procured, and the Thomas H. Eames Memorial Hospital opened its doors June 9th. The old hospital building still stands on Adobe Road, now home to the Faith in the Word Christian Center. I must have been great for residents to have a hospital to access all the way out here. I know that's an ongoing concern for residents, and so I know many residents are happy to have the High Desert Medical Center here in Joshua Tree for access to health care. Moving on to events, here's what's happening in the Morongo Basin. I always welcome events to be shared with me. I try to keep track as best as I can of events happening in the desert. And so if you know of something that relates to the subject that I cover at LaurinelleTheHighDesert.com, and you are welcome to send me the events, and I will post it on my calendar. You can view all of the events that I'm sharing with you on my calendar at LaurinelleOfTheHighDesert.com in case you missed something. So on January 8th, there will be an old schoolhouse lecture about the Forgotten Gold Rush that starts at 7 p.m., and the old schoolhouse is located in 29 Palms. It is $5 to attend. There is not much information about this lecture other than it will be given by Paul Smith. And if you would like more information, call 760-367-5535. The Old Schoolhouse Lectures are my favorite. It takes place once a month, and they always cover great topics. On January 15th, starting at 7 p.m., there will be a Black Rock Lecture about the history of Joshua Tree National Park. This will be taking place at the Black Rock Ranger Station in Yucca Valley, which is a cool location to visit. The speaker will be Joe Zarkey, who is a retired chief of interpretation. He will be discussing his new book on the history of Joshua Tree National Park, and this lecture is free to attend. The Morongo Basin Conservation Association will be hosting its 47th annual meeting on January 23rd, starting at 12 p.m., ends at 3:30 p.m., and they did send out quite a bit of information about this event, so here is what you need to know. It will be taking place at the Yucca Valley Community Center, which is located in Yucca Valley. And here's what they had to say. We have a great program in the works in conjunction with the California Desert Coalition. We will present a local energy symposium with presenters sharing how communities are using the community choice aggregation structure authorized under California's Assembly Bill 117 to buy green renewable energy for their own citizens. Engineer Bill Powers is the founder of the San Diego Energy District Foundation and is one of the country's most respected engineers in utility and energy resource management, shaping strategy to achieve renewable energy objectives for the country's leading public and investor-owned utilities. He will present the report created for the California Desert Coalition that outlines the resources and opportunities within the Morongo Basin to locally generate rooftop solar. Barbara Boswell, director of both Choice Energy and Finance Departments for the City of Lancaster, will detail Lancaster's successful CCA, which again stands for Community Choice Aggregation Program, including ratepayer cost savings. Boswell recently noted, "We've only been a full-fledged electricity provider for a couple of months, and we've already saved Lancaster residents and business owners thousands of dollars on their energy bills." Woody Hastings, the Renewable Energy Implementation Manager for the Center for Climate Protection in Santa Rosa, will discuss Sonoma County's successes with one of the very first community choice aggregations in California, Sonoma Clean Power. That should be really interesting to hear from these speakers. I remember recently on the broadcast reporting that San Diego just made a major advancement in developing rooftop solar on government structure or county structures, libraries, and it was a big win for San Diego for rooftop solar, so I'm very excited about San Diego. So it should be interesting to hear from the engineer builders from San Diego. Very exciting. Again, that's going to be January 23rd, starts at 12 p.m. at the Yucca Valley Community Center. That's all the events I have for now, but there is more happening later in the month in February, and I'm always getting new events. So again, be sure to go to laurenelleofthehighdesert.com to visit the calendar. The events that I promote relate primarily to infrastructure development, such as solar or water development. I cover the Dollar General activity here in Joshua Tree, and any educational events as well. I love history because history tells us how we got to where we are today. And so, again, if you have events that you know of that relate to that and it's coming up, then please let me know, and I'm happy to add it to my calendar. Here's news coming up. I actually don't have much local news this week, and this will probably be a more consistent change happening in laurenelleofthehighdesert.com's broadcast because I'm planning to relocate. And so I am keeping an eye on more national-based news and even overseas news about advancements happening in public transportation sector, energy sectors. And I'm going to be providing this. I'm still going to have connections with the Morongo Basin. And my goal in covering this information is not simply to expose what's happening in the world to Morongo Basin residents, but to also spark ideas of what to do for advancement. I think that if you only know your local community and that's all you keep up with, it's difficult to advance in infrastructure because you need to be aware of what's happening in other parts of the United States and other parts of the world and see what's working for other communities in order to bring it here to the Morongo Basin. And this has been happening with the Dollar General activity. Not only have Morongo Basin residents look to other communities who have successfully combated Dollar General, but other communities are looking at Joshua Tree as an example. So really, we're serving as an example for other communities. Other communities serve examples for us. And so that is why I'm pretty excited to share news that's happening in other parts of the U.S. and to stimulate ideas about what can happen here in San Bernardino County and really Southern California as a whole, because I know that a lot of listeners come from Los Angeles and San Diego and other parts of the United States. So here's an article that I found, because in my last broadcast last week, I reported that Nevada had the Nevada Bureau of Consumer Protection. No, that's not the group. The Nevada Public Utilities Commission had voted on increasing fees on solar users in Nevada. And I don't have the exact numbers as of now as to what the fees would be, but it was just voted very quickly. It is said, it was predicted that users or household homeowners with solar would not be saving as much money as what they were initially told when they installed solar. So this was a big story for me to cover, primarily because of the solar advancement here in Southern California. But so that was interesting to hear about. But I found this interesting story this week about a organization or entity that's combating these fees. So to get to the point, I'm going to read this article to you. It's coming from ReviewJournal.com. It was published on December 24th, 2015. And the title is Nevada Agency Seeks to Block New Rates for Rooftop Solar Customers. And so I'm going to breeze through this article really quickly because it's just an interesting topic. The Nevada Bureau of Consumer Protection on Thursday filed a motion to halt the implementation of a new net metering rate for rooftop solar customers while petitions seeking reconsideration or clarification of the controversial decision can be filed. The petition filed with the Nevada Public Utilities Commission says that the order approved Tuesday appears to conflict with desire of Governor Brian Sandoval to allow the rooftop solar industry to continue to create jobs while balancing the interests of non-solar ratepayers. Quote, major companies in the solar industry have stated the order could result in the loss of jobs numbering in the thousands, the petition signed by consumer advocate Eric Witkowski says. Such an outcome is not consistent with the governor's stated objectives of SB 374 or the governor's initiatives and focus to increase jobs and employment for Nevada residents. Senate Bill 374 is the measure approved by the 2015 legislature directing the Public Utilities Commission to craft a new rate for net metering customers of Nevada's energy. Net metering allows most with rooftop systems to receive a credit for the excess energy they generate. The new tariff approved by the Public Utility Commission will increase the monthly fixed charge solar customers will have to pay and will reduce the credit reserve received for each kilowatt hour of excess energy generated to wholesale rates. The new rate structure will take effect January 1st and will apply to rooftop solar customers regardless when their systems were installed. Following the decision, the rooftop solar company SolarCity said it will no longer sell or install rooftop solar systems in Nevada. The Alliance for Solar Choice said it will challenge the new rates in court. The application of the new rates to existing customers is particularly troubling, according to the filing. Existing net metering customers understandably feel a bit confused, frustrated, and aggrieved to find out their rates related to net metering will change January 1st, 2016, the filing says. Further, the commission's order does not recognize or acknowledged there could be significant value of a robust rooftop solar program that could negate the need for a $900 million investment in a natural gas plant in the near future, a plant that would likely only be needed for a few months out of the year, the filing said. Postponement of the implementation of the new rooftop solar rates would allow the Public Utility Commission additional time to consider the issues raised, obtain clarification on some aspects of the order, and ensure that the implementation of the tariffs more closely aligns with the law as well as the stated objectives of the governor. The Bureau of Consumer Protection is asking that response to its petition be filed by Tuesday. Contact Sean Whaley to learn more. His email is S as in Sam, W as in Whale, H as in Hat, A as in Apple, L as in Lion, E as in Everyday, Y as in Yellow, @bbjournal.com, or call 775-687-3900. And I encourage you to do so because I think this is paving the way for the solar industry. And it's Solar City, Las Nevada, and I just question how this will impact California and other states when they're advancing in solar energy. This directly impacts rooftop users. So I was excited to see this article because I was just stunned last week when I learned that the Nevada Public Utilities Commission just out of the blue decided to raise the rate. And it's making rooftop solar less desirable to homeowners. Moving on, here's another story that stood out to me, and it relates to national parks. We are very close to a national park right here, so I know this is of interest to listeners. This is coming from a website, truthout.org. It was released December 28, 2015. And the title is Big Water versus National Parks, the fight against water goes federal. Took out bits and pieces of this article. In mid-December, Congress passed a provision within a $1.8 trillion budget bill requiring the National Park Service to file a report justifying a ban on selling bottled water at a number of parks around the country. Meanwhile, the bottled water industry promoted a rider in the appropriations bill prohibiting use of federal funds to support banning bottled water in national parks. So far, over 20 parks have gone bottled water free, including the Grand Canyon, Canyonlands, Zion and Bryce Canyon, and Fort Sumter National Monument. This is another development in the ongoing fight between the National Park Service and Big Water over banning bottled water. So when I'm reading this article and it says Big Water, at first I thought that was an organization, but when I read this article, it seems that Big Water is a term that's used for the major bottled water companies, such as Coca-Cola. With Coca-Cola does Asante, then there's Nestle with Arrowhead, these major corporations in this article have been coined as Big Water. The University of Vermont removed bottled water as an experiment, and I don't have the dates of when this happened. It was in the past 5 years, but there was a study that was conducted that claimed when bottled water was removed that there was an increase of purchase of sugary drinks, and so the university had slammed the decision of removing bottled water, saying that it's not good for the students. But it was pointed out that this study that was conducted was faulty. It didn't have solid evidence, solid studies conducted. And also there are alternatives that it did not consider in the release, such as fountain water and also quote-unquote healthy drinks being available to students. Lauren DeRuscia, a senior national campaign organizer with Corporate Accountability International, told Truth Out that parks that go bottled water free are increasing access to tap water. So any place where there used to be access to bottled water, now there's access to tap water. Parks also undergo a long feasibility process before they can ban bottled water. Several parks have gone bottled water free, largely because of the waste that bottled water produces. For example, Grand Canyon National Park banned the sale of bottled water in 2012 and then installed designated water refilling stations. The park claimed before the ban was instated that disposable plastic water bottles comprise an estimate of 20% of Grand Canyon's waste stream and 30% of the park's recyclables. I'm not reading the full article to you. This is just summing it up. But basically, the big water corporations are requiring, or they had Congress request that the national parks justify why they aren't selling bottled water. So I have yet to see what is going to happen with that in terms of the justification. It's interesting that they have to do that. But in the meantime, there is a lot of information provided as to why banning bottled water at national parks is really beneficial to the parks and the visitors and the wildlife. Here's a story about an activity that's happening overseas, and I'm hoping to see this progress. The title of the article is Germany Opens First Stretch of Bicycle Autobahn. This was published by road.cc on December 29, 2015. And just some general information, Germany has just opened the first 5-kilometer stretch of traffic-free bicycle highway that is set to span over 100 kilometers, running largely along disused railroad tracks and network. The network will connect 10 western cities in the Ruhr region. Almost 2 million people live within 2 kilometers of the route and will be able to use sections for commuting. A study by the group calculates the track should take 50,000 cars off the road every day. That's really exciting to hear about. I know out here in the desert, it's questionable if anything like that would ever come here. That would be great if it did, an elevated bike path so that people could cycle without having to ever worry about traffic and be able to get to where they need to go. But I know in Los Angeles and San Diego and major cities in general, this would be really great for residents there and for people commuting. This is really fascinating to me because this is not cutting edge. This is not brand new. One of my favorite parts of California history was reading about the California Cycleway that began construction in 1897. And it was basically the same concept. It was an elevated bike path that went over homes. It went over roads so people could easily ride from where they wanted to go. And it was in Los Angeles. It started in the Pasadena area and extended down to what is now downtown Los Angeles. And this was when cycling was really popular in the late 1800s, early 1900s. It was a business venture. And unfortunately, it was never finished. It began construction in 1897, but never was completed, and but it's always been something in the back of my mind, and I've said it many times, is bring back California Cycleway. So I'm really excited to hear about Germany opening basically a cycleway, and I'm hoping that it will serve as an example to the U.S. and to other countries. That's the primary news that I have for now. I want to say that congratulations to the National Park Service. They turned 100 years old in 2016, so it's very exciting. There are 16 free days offered to enter national parks this year in 2016, and I put the article on LaurenelleOfTheHighDesert.com's Facebook page, so you can go there, and I'll also release the information on the website. So keep that in mind and try to get your kids out or your family, relatives, friends, whoever, when you get the chance. And so I have a few more minutes to fill here on the show, and so I'm just going to brief over some stories that I found from Z1077.com that I thought were really interesting. And here's a story. It was published on December 31st, 2015. Title is New State Medical Marijuana Laws Take Effect Friday. So I'll just brief this to you really quickly. California's medical marijuana industry is growing up fast, so to speak, because a new law professionalizing the growth, sale, and taxation of the plant that goes into effect Friday. The California Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act establishes a new state agency, the Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation, that will gear up and start issuing permits. A new law that establishes a framework of state regulation for medical marijuana goes into effect tomorrow. Dale Geringer, Director of California Division of National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, says patients eventually will see more dispensaries set up shop. Here's a quote. I think it's going to result in more access, partly because it does allow for-profit operation, and local governments are going to feel more comfortable with allowing state-regulated facilities than with unregulated facilities. Dozens of local municipalities, including Yucca Valley, have passed ordinances to either allow or forbid medical marijuana sales within their borders. By some estimates, the state and cities stand to make $1 billion a year in taxes once the industry builds out. Geringer says the industry has evolved enormously just in the past few years. The industry itself has taken a lot of steps to increase testing of products, maintain certain standards in regards to pesticides, he says, but a lot more has to be done, and it's going to be done with state guidance. Next November, voters will weigh in on ballot measures to legalize marijuana for recreational use. This is really fascinating because many of you may recall that in Yucca Valley, there was the vote on Measure X in 2015, and I recall going to Yucca Valley City Council meetings where Measure X was introduced to the public, and there were so many advocates who supported opening legal or medical marijuana dispensaries in Yucca Valley. One resident after another just went up to the podium and spoke in favor of bringing medical marijuana dispensaries back to Yucca Valley, or basically legalizing it so that they can exist within the city limits. And I personally thought that, okay, there's obviously a lot of support here for medical marijuana dispensaries. The board is going to vote in favor of it. But what ended up happening was the board said, we need to consult with the entire community and do a community vote so that we know we're making the best decision. And so that's when all of these signs started going up on Highway 62 about vote on Measure X or vote no on Measure X. And I was just shocked when Measure X was, I think it was, yeah, it was voted on no. So that meant that medical marijuana dispensaries can't pop up here in Yucca Valley. And then, as of recent, I did read an article that said there were a few very large growth facilities that were voted in favor by the City Council of Desert Hot Springs. So Desert Hot Springs was really paving the way here in San Bernardino County for marijuana growth. Desert Hot Springs is basically next door to Yucca Valley, in my opinion. So it just made me chuckle because Yucca Valley voted no on medical marijuana dispensaries, but it was recently brought up in an article coming from a local source that the city of Yucca Valley is now readdressing the medical marijuana dispensaries. With this article here from Z1077, I mean, there is a whole new department that was established for marijuana management. And so this is exciting to hear about. So that's the world of marijuana right there for you, happening here in the U.S. or in the California region. That's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope all of you had a wonderful new year. I hope you're looking forward to 2016. Please go to laurenellabahaidesert.com to learn more information about the events that I shared with you. You can also find me on Facebook, Lauren L. of the High Desert. I'm happy to report I have 440 likes right now. I'm also on Instagram, so be sure to follow me there, and I'm happy to connect with you. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you soon. Take care.